I'm Amanda Paris, Director of Alumni Career Services here at the UVA Alumni Association. Happy New Year, and we're really excited that you guys joined us today. So as we mentioned, we're going to talk about career trends and resolutions for the new year, considerations for both job seekers and people who are currently employed, just some tips and tricks that you might want to think about as you think about your career development this year. So I'm going to go up first. I'm covering 5 career trends for the new year. These are just trends and movements that I've seen coming through the years, but it seems like 2017 might be the year that a number of these things become more mainstream or just more prevalent. These are my 5 trends that I'm thinking about for the new year. So we're looking at an increased focus on the candidate and employee experience, augmented and virtual reality for recruiting and training, showing your emotional intelligence, not just talking about it, digital literacy, becoming the new literacy, and the passive job seeker. So let's roll into these. I chose this one first because the number one thing I hear from my clients who are seeking is frustration and sometimes confusion about a lack of communication from an employer with whom they're interacting or applying to. And I also hear from clients who are looking to switch jobs because they're just not happy with their current employer, or they love their work, but the culture or the company environment just isn't what they're looking for. And so this seems to be on my clients' minds a lot, and so I wanted to dive into that first. So I just wanted to share a few statistics with you guys. This is from a workplace trend study that was done in July of 2016, so it's fairly recent. And you can see the majority of job seekers who responded to this study have had a poor candidate experience with a company. And what's worse for the company is that a majority of the majority are going to employer relations, employer review sites to share their negative feedback. And knowing, going to my second point, that a candidate's job search experience heavily influences their choice of employer, having a negative candidate experience is bad for both the job seeker and the company. For those who are currently employed and happy in their jobs, 83% of HR staff who responded to the same study said that the employee experience is either important or very important to the organization's success. And that's probably pretty obvious. If you're happy at work, if you feel like you're doing good work and you feel valued, you're going to work harder and you're going to help that company or that organization grow more. So what are companies doing to improve the experience for both candidates and employees? Companies like Virgin and Zappos have redesigned their job candidate experiences. So they either have a website or a hub or apps, or they're doing other sorts of activities. I'm going to refer to those in the next trend that we get to, that help them not only identify talent, but stay connected to that talent before, during, and after the interview process. What's more important is that companies like Zappos are staying in touch even when the position doesn't work out for the candidate. Because if they like that candidate, if they had a connection with that candidate, they want to keep that person in the pipeline in case a better fitting position comes along. And so that's making the candidates feel good, it's making them feel heard and recognized, and it's making it easier for employers to keep in touch with that talent. For those companies that are looking at the current employee roster or pool, there's more of a focus on benefits, perks, and environment. And that goes beyond sort of the cliche of, oh, there's a foosball table or there's an espresso bar. I mean, those things are great. But they're looking more at the holistic employee experience, so investment in wellness programs, maybe doing away with traditional PTO and making unlimited leave a policy, granting sabbaticals in industries where you typically wouldn't think about granting someone a sabbatical. So these are activities that employers are looking at to help employees feel more valued and to help make the entire experience better beyond just salary. And so that's something that they're looking at on both sides of the coin, seeker and current employee. So if you're a job seeker, one thing I would take away from this trend is if you are looking at opportunities, if you're looking at companies, if they have processes like a website to have you interact with them, or if they have apps or online challenges, depending on the industry you're looking at, take advantage of those. It's going to help you get to know the employer. It's going to allow them to get to know you, and it will give you a good indication of what your experience might be with them as an employee. For example, Amazon has, for some of their positions, they have a day in the life module that they ask you to take and go through before you even interview with them, so that you know what you're getting into, you have an idea of what that position is like, and they can also inform questions that you may have during the interview process. So take advantage of those experiences if they exist with companies that you're interacting with. For current employees, now's the time to be thinking about what are maybe some benefits or programs that your organization could bring on that could really make the employee experience better. Or even on a micro level, if you manage a team, are there some things you can be doing to make your team feel valued and happy and fulfilled going into 2017? So let's move on to the second trend that I alluded to. Augmented and virtual reality for recruiting and training. So I'm sure we all during the holiday season saw the Samsung commercials advertising their virtual reality headset. And of course, this summer you couldn't go anywhere without seeing people running around with their phones playing Pokemon Go. So augmented and virtual reality are having a consumer moment. And usually once it hits the consumer market, it's officially mainstream. And so we're going to look at a couple of ways that companies are implementing these two technologies and ways that you might be able to take advantage of it. A brief just primer, when we're talking about augmented reality, we're talking about using some sort of technology to interact with your existing environment with a technology sort of overlay. So again, Pokemon Go is a great example because you may be in your house or in a park that's real, but through the phone you're seeing some virtual elements, some augmented elements. So Pikachu is on your phone, obviously not actually in the park. For virtual reality, that's more of an immersive experience. So as you can see here, the pilot is using Oculus to go through a flight simulation. So your entire visual field is completely immersed in this virtual technology, and it allows you to interact with different elements of that reality. So as I mentioned in the employee and candidate experience trend, a number of companies like General Mills and GE are offering virtual reality and augmented reality aspects to their candidate evaluation process to just help candidates get to know their company better. So they're offering office tours, day in the life experiences. You may have an augmented reality experience when you're on site for a day of interviews. Some are using games, again, gotta give credit to Pokemon Go here, that help engage potential candidates that serve not only as an evaluation or an assessment, but a fun way for a candidate to interact with the company and show what they can do, show versus telling, which is going to be part of our third trend. And a number of companies are offering virtual reality chat rooms or challenges, again, just to engage and foster that connection throughout the candidate evaluation process. And just in terms of training, so that was the recruiting side, but the training side, virtual reality training has been used in several industries successfully, the military, healthcare, aviation. We saw the pilot going through the flight simulation. So that's been in use for a couple of years now. I think the next step in that that we're seeing is companies that are training using virtual reality and then offering feedback in real time. So I think Ford is using this. A number of auto manufacturers are using this in their assembly trainings so that you can watch the person go through a process virtually and then offer that feedback as they're going through the process. And then a number of companies are using both of these technologies for non-tactical simulations. So that's, again, sort of the next phase now that we've sort of reached this mainstream point of having using this technology to go through customer service scenarios or do a dry run of a huge event, using these technologies to help people practice and train through those sort of non-tactical, non-military, non-industrial training and run-through exercises. So if you're a job seeker, again, this is another way to sort of take advantage of some new technology and get yourself familiar with it. It's a way to better connect with an employer, and it's a way to show that you're comfortable with using new technology to engage with an employer and inform your process as you're evaluating whether this employer is right for you. So it's a great way to gather and share information. If you are a current employee, this might be, depending on your industry or role, this could be a great way to introduce some new technology for training or even team building. And it's a great thing to put on your resume if you're able to bring in a virtual or augmented reality training and then implement it successfully and have some great results from that. Let's go to number three, showing your emotional intelligence. So for years now, we've been hearing about emotional intelligence, or EI, or EQ. I tend to call it EQ, so that's probably what I'll run with for this section, and how important it is. At its base, emotional intelligence, or EQ, is all about successfully fostering, developing, and maintaining personal relationships. So I've been touching on technology for the first two trends. Now we're going to talk about the human element of the job search process. And when I'm talking about EQ, I'm talking about what's encompassed by this graphic that we're looking at right now. So we have self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. So those are all major components. And it's more important than ever to show employers that you have a high EQ level. So again, it won't be enough, like with a lot of skills that you want to show, not tell. We talk about that a lot with our clients, showing versus telling. But with emotional intelligence, it can be easy to say, oh, yes, I'm empathetic, or yes, I'm self-aware, or I develop great relationships. Because this is such a key skill that employers are looking for, it's really going to come down to great stories and great examples of how you showed empathy, or perhaps how you worked with a team. Maybe the team was dysfunctional and you were able to bring everyone together and get them working together successfully. A story like that is really going to resonate with an employer. Now, with the second bullet, job seekers who develop their likability have an advantage over those with equal or better qualifications. When I say likability, I don't mean be someone you're not, or be fake, or put on a persona that doesn't feel comfortable or isn't authentic. Absolutely not. This is more of a showing your best self. So part of emotional intelligence is evaluating what your audience is looking for in terms of, you know, you as a job seeker and they as a company, and then really being able to show them through relationship development that you're a great fit for their culture. So again, when I say likability, definitely not talking about being anyone but yourself. Now, if you're a job seeker, one of the most effective ways to show your emotional intelligence before you even get in the interview room is through networking. And so when you think about what networking is, it's reaching out to people, sometimes people you know, sometimes people you don't. Developing an effective connection with that person or people, and then being able to successfully talk about why you're interested in their industry or their role or their company. And so if you're networking effectively, hopefully by the time you get into the interview, you've already spoken with 2, 3, 4 people in that company. You have people in the company who are excited that you're coming in for the interview. And before you've even sat down with the hiring manager, you've already shown that person that you have high emotional intelligence because you've effectively developed and fostered these relationships to get you to this point. So again, the stories are important, but you can also show through your actions your high level of emotional intelligence. So let's see what number four is. Digital literacy is new literacy. And so much like with emotional intelligence, I just want to share the aspects of digital literacy when, you know, I'm talking about that. So there are 7 main elements, and you can see them here. And you can see that it's not just about knowing how to use technology or being able to, you know, put a post on Facebook or write something on Twitter or have a blog. The literacy piece of it is really about being able to evaluate what the right kind of technology is to solve the problem or complete the project, how to use it, and then how to effectively evaluate whether that technology brought you the results you needed. So when we talk about digital literacy, we're talking about everything from maintaining your online reputation to doing research and writing, being able to use technology for training and professional development. So the literacy piece touches on a number of technology skills that also combine with emotional intelligence to bring about that well-rounded set of skills. So this slide is a little obvious, but just a reminder that, you know, all jobs will require some level of technical savvy. The second bullet is not meant to make anyone panic or be negative. If a job can be automated by technology, it eventually will. That's just the way of the world as we, you know, acquire methods that allow us to do our jobs more efficiently, we're going to take advantage of those. I have it here as more of an opportunity. If you're developing your digital literacy, then a particular job may not be available because it's been automated, but usually the technology that's automating that job requires several other jobs and still requires a human element. So for example, the virtual technology that I talked about before, so you may not have an in-person trainer taking you through an exercise or an assembly exercise or teaching you how to fly a plane, but you're still going to have a human element in making sure that the training is right for the industry and for the role and for the company. You still have to have someone to do the follow-up and to assess and make sure that the people who have received the training have fulfilled the competencies. And so you still have that human element. But the opportunity there is to make sure that you're staying up to date on your technology that relates to your job and any emerging technology that can help you land that next job. So again, it's, in my opinion, it's more about opportunity than loss. And again, this last bullet, the ability to use the technology is key, but also thinking critically and when and where to use the right resources for the job are incredibly important. So on the flip side, I want to acknowledge that technology, you know, is fantastic for building connections, but it can also slow down the search process on both sides. For employers, if they're relying too heavily on technology, they may be missing out on some great candidates because of whatever filtering software they're using for resumes, or if they have too many applications in their online system, they may not get to everyone who could be a really great fit. And for job seekers, in addition to my clients feeling frustrated that they're not hearing back from the employer, there's also frustration that you feel like you put in an application, you work hard on it, and it goes out into the ether, and you have no idea what happened. And so this is just a reminder to, you know, don't rely solely on job boards and online applications. Obviously, those are a mechanism that you have to use, but again, bring in the EQ element and develop real relationships with contacts and companies that you're interested in, because that's going to put you above the massive amount of applications that most companies are getting for roles. Employee referrals are still the number one way to land a job, and often jobs are available that haven't been posted. So again, if you're developing those relationships and using technology as a tool, but not as the only tool in your job search, that's really key. And speaking of job seekers, my fifth trend, the passive job seeker. When I'm talking about a passive job seeker, I'm referring to people who are currently employed but are open to new opportunities. So they might not be actively seeking, but they are, you know, if someone came to them and said, I have a fantastic opportunity at my company, you'd be a great fit, would you be open to it? They say yes. And that's demonstrated here by this graphic that we have up for you. So this was a survey from 2011 where 74% of people surveyed said, yes, I would leave my current job if I were approached with a new opportunity. So that's something to think about, not only as an employer, but if you're currently employed or if you're an active seeker, understanding that, you know, there may be people who aren't actively seeking, but because they have good relationships, they have people approaching them with new opportunities. So there's something to be pulled from this trend from all of our different constituents. So again, many job candidates are not active seekers, but they're open to new opportunities. So what can we take from that? If you're currently employed and you're not an active seeker, you can make your own luck by keeping your network active. Obviously, as a job seeker, you can do this too. But, you know, keeping those opportunities open, keeping those relationships open, because you never know when someone is going to have an opening in their company and then think of you because they know what you're up to, which leads to my next bullet, What have you been up to? So keep those things fresh. Refresh your LinkedIn, keep a resume refreshed, and always be ready to talk about recent projects or accomplishments. Just because you never know who you're going to run into in the airport, on the subway, in a coffee shop, you just never know. And that doesn't mean, again, I want everyone to feel like they can be their authentic selves. And not everyone wants to just start talking about how great they are at work right away. My advice is more like keep it in your back pocket so that if it comes up and it's appropriate, you have something to say. If your friend calls you and says, I have a great opportunity, but the deadline is tomorrow, if you have that resume updated, you can, dash off a quick cover letter and you're ready to go. And especially with LinkedIn is a great resource for recruiters and employees and job seekers, because recruiters are always using the back-end recruiting technology with LinkedIn to look for people who are both active and passive job seekers who have great credentials that can fit with their company and their opportunities. So if you're keeping that current, it's making your own luck. You don't have to do a whole lot behind it, but you are making it possible for people to find you for that next great job. I decided to include a bonus evergreen job slide just because I know a lot of times when we talk about trends, we tend to talk about what jobs are hot this year. And I wanted to kind of do the opposite of that and just put it up here, jobs that will almost always be in demand. What I really liked about this list that I found is that it's a balance of jobs that do need advanced degrees and jobs that don't necessarily. And just to make the point that all, these jobs, they're all valuable and we always are going to need teachers and plumbers and electricians and engineers and attorneys and dentists. So just a little food for thought in terms of if you're early in your career and you're looking for the career that's almost always going to be in demand, this is a good place to start. Can you turn it over to my colleague, Liz Sprouse, to take you through some career resolutions for the year?
Hi, thanks, Liz. Amanda, and hi, everybody. I'm Liz Sprouse. I'm Associate Director and Senior Career Advisor. I do the majority of the client advising here at Alumni Career Services. So I'm going to talk about five career resolutions for the new year. And for anybody who's joined us late, if you have any questions during the presentation, please feel free to type them in. We will do questions at the end. So with that, a new year is really a great time to make a fresh start. You may have goals for the coming year. Maybe you're thinking about getting a new job or an entirely new career. Maybe you're thinking about grad school. So another thing you might be thinking about is pursuing a promotion or developing a new skill. Sometimes people don't necessarily have a specific goal in mind, but they know that they want to feel that they're still growing professionally. So whatever your goals may be, we've developed a list of resolutions that can really help you put your best foot forward for the coming year, help you be better prepared for any opportunities that might come up quickly, like Amanda was mentioning, and also be ready to capitalize on some of these trends. So we're focusing on five things that can really help make the biggest positive impact on your career this year. These are all things that we recommend everybody be doing regularly. These are things we talk about with our clients, even if you're not necessarily planning to make a change. They're just a part of good overall career management strategy. So that way, if something comes up quickly or you need to make a decision, everything is going to be ready and you'll be in a position to act quickly. So the five career resolutions for the new year that we're going to be talking about are making networking a habit, updating your resume, maximizing your LinkedIn experience, committing to professional development, and then finally leveraging technology. So you may notice that many of these pick up on some of the trends that Amanda was mentioning before. So the first resolution that we're going to talk about is making networking a habit. We've listed networking first because it truly is a fundamental part of your career management strategy. From day one, you really should be working toward developing and nurturing a strong professional network. So this would be people who know your accomplishments and strengths, your character, and what you're capable of. They may be people that you've worked with before or people that you want to work with in the future. Your network can help propel you to your next career move, and it can also help you land on your feet if you experience a setback. In addition,
it can help you learn about jobs that haven't been advertised, and Amanda was mentioning that just a moment ago. So nurturing your network on an ongoing basis really is an investment strategy to help ensure that your network is going to be there for you when you need it. And so it's critical that you also spend some time giving to your network as well as benefiting from your network. So what are some ways that you can work to making networking a habit for the coming year? So the first thing that you can do is to commit to attending at least one networking event every year. As you can see on the slide, there are a lot of different types of networking events. There's really something for everyone, every comfort level, and many of these networking events also involve the sharing of knowledge or learning. So it's really a good opportunity to connect with other people professionally. In addition, attending networking events or other kinds of professional events is a great strategy. When you attend these events, you may be exchanging business cards with people that you meet. So after the event, you can go back and follow up by connecting with them on LinkedIn, and that will help you continue to build your professional network. You can also think about joining networking groups or maybe LinkedIn professional groups as well. These groups are really built around a specific professional interest. They give you an opportunity to connect with people with whom you have professional interest in common, and you can have interesting conversations with other people in your field. Perhaps participating in these groups could lead to leadership opportunities for you as well, and that helps you continue to strengthen your professional brand. So how can you find out about some of these groups? Well, with LinkedIn, there's a search bar at the top of your screen, so you can type in you know, the name of the field and groups, and you should be able to find them that way. And then to find out about professional associations or their affiliated websites, you can do a simple Google search. So type in professional association of and then insert the name of your field, and you should be able to find out about, you know, the American Marketing Association or SHRM or other similar professional networking groups. So again, as we've mentioned, nurturing your network is an important part of your career management strategy. Think about also how you might be able to give back to your network. You know, this is another part of the nurturing process. When you keep an eye on what's going on in your LinkedIn newsfeed, you'll notice that your connections are sharing accomplishments or sharing articles they've written, or maybe they're liking things. So if you can just spend a few moments to comment or like on things that your colleagues are sharing, that will also help them become a thought leader in their field and kind of contributes to that ongoing process of nurturing your network. And then you can just make learning or practicing your networking skills part of your normal process. If you need support before that first networking event this year that you're thinking about attending, we do have a couple of webinars that can help you get started. And these are available in our webinar library. One's called Magnetic Networking. The other one's called Networking for Introverts, and it's helpful even if you identify more with extroversion. Lots of helpful tips there. Overall, you know, alumni are very happy to help if you're reaching out to your alumni network. So when you think about what kinds of approaches you might use, asking questions, asking for advice, go over very well, and often involve a lot of listening on your part too. So it's a great way to begin reaching out to people and broadening your network. Many of the people that you might be reaching out to have been in a similar position themselves before, so they're happy to be able to pay it forward. So resolution number two for 2017 is to update your resume. It's always a good idea to keep your resume up to date. So as Amanda said, you can take advantage of opportunities that might come up quickly, and then you may only need to do just a few moments of tweaking in order to tailor it to the right opportunity. So, you know, this will definitely save you time. So some of the ways that you can just kind of keep your resume up to date on an ongoing basis would be just making sure that you add anything new as soon as it happens. So this could be accomplishments, it could be new jobs, certificates, degrees, really anything that you have experienced recently, go ahead and add it to your resume right away, and that way it's done while it's fresh and you don't have to go back later and remember the details. You want to also think about putting any quantifiable accomplishments on your resume. So if you're keeping track through your annual performance review, or if you do weekly or monthly updates where you can show that you were instrumental in a certain percentage or dollar amount of increased sales or, you know, improvements, anything that you can quantify, go ahead and add those as well. And that will frame your accomplishments in a way that's meaningful to the person who's reading your resume. And Amanda mentioned before when she was talking about EQ, the importance of showing versus telling. And I think this is especially important when you're talking about qualities over skills. You know, when you're talking about things like your, let's say, communication skills or your leadership ability, it's important to put them into, again, a context that's meaningful to the person who's reading your resume. So if you put, you know, I have superior communication skills on your resume, it's going to read a little bit strangely. So instead of saying that you have them, you can demonstrate that you do by writing a very compelling cover letter or making sure that your resume is free of errors. And for leadership skills, for instance, you could describe a time when you successfully led a project rather than saying that you have these leadership skills. Next, you want to think about deleting any information that's old or out of date or no longer relevant to what you want to do. You really have a limited amount of space to make an impact with your resume. We hear over and over that employers are skimming your resume in 5 to 6 seconds, so everything that goes on your resume should be there to make an impact and showcase your abilities. And then next, regularly make it a habit of updating your resume with any current industry terms or keywords. Most employers, especially most large employers, have moved to using applicant tracking systems now. So when you apply for a job, your resume is being scanned electronically for certain things. So if you're keeping abreast by reading job postings, staying on top of your professional association website and your peers on LinkedIn, you'll have a sense of what those terms are and can make sure that you're using them on your resume, again, in a meaningful context. The meaningful context part is important because you don't want to just be putting them on there, but using them in a way that makes sense for the opportunity that you're applying for. Okay, so the third resolution is to maximize your LinkedIn experience. So Amanda talked a bit before about how important LinkedIn is and what a powerful tool it can be for you. And so a lot of the things that you can do on LinkedIn are very helpful, very powerful. You can manage your professional connections. You can find and apply for jobs. You can do some industry research. You can do some career path research, identify job targets, which would be target employers, and in general, just build your professional network. And if you have the free LinkedIn subscription, you can do all of these things using the free version. So the first thing that you can do is to join. There are some people that haven't joined LinkedIn yet. Maybe they have concerns about privacy, or they just haven't felt that they've needed to join yet, but do consider joining if you haven't already. It is a very powerful resource and it can really help you move forward in your career goals. The next thing that you can do if you already are on LinkedIn is to spend some time sprucing up your profile. So employers are checking you out, so it's good to have an up-to-date LinkedIn profile. Make sure you have a picture. You can add any, kind of like we talked about with your resume, any recent updates. Make sure you're connecting with those industry terms and keywords that can make you more likely to be found by a recruiter, as Amanda was talking about with the passive job search process. We do have a webinar in the library on how to create a standout LinkedIn profile that gets results. So it walks you through your profile top to bottom and talks about ways that you can make some adjustments. The next feature that we use all the time, many times a day, is the LinkedIn Alumni Dashboard. I would say this is arguably the most powerful feature in LinkedIn, at least from our point of view, and one that a lot of people don't know about. But it allows you to go in and do some research of your fellow alumni to get a sense of who, what employers are hiring the most UVA alumni, and you can filter that by location. You can also filter that by the type of work they do, the majors, what some of their skills are. And again, this is a feature that's available if you have the free LinkedIn account. To access this feature from your main home screen, you click My Network at the top and then Find Alumni, and you'll see columns for each of these categories. If you have attended more than one university, or if you want to look at alumni of schools you did not attend, you can do that too. There's a button that says Change University. So I hope you'll find this to be a useful feature. Some of you may already be using it, but if you haven't, I would encourage you to check it out. And then finally, with LinkedIn, you can definitely make strategic connections. It makes it very easy for you to connect with those second degree contacts. And many people haven't realized yet that you can see all of the people you have in common with those second degree contacts. So if there's somebody you really want to meet, you can look at their profile. Down at the bottom, it shows you all of your mutual connections. So maybe there's just one, but there might be, you know, 10 or 12. And you can figure out who the strongest mutual connection is and maybe go through them to request an introduction. And LinkedIn also does have an introduction feature built in from that second degree profile page. So these are all really great features, and I hope that you'll check them out. Resolution number 4 for 2017 is to commit to professional development. So, you know, 2017 may be the year that you finally pursue that certificate or take a class, learn a new skill, maybe even go back for another degree, or commit to attending that professional conference that you've had your eye on. There really are professional development opportunities for everyone and for every budget. And why should you be doing this? Well, it helps you stay abreast of what's going on in your industry. And many of the other people who work in your field are going to be pursuing professional development opportunities. So you should, too, so that you can stay abreast of your competition. So some of the things that you can do with regard to professional development, there are a lot of different ways that you can research what others are doing in your field. You can see here on the slide, there's a list of some of the sources you can check, so you can see what the top standards are for your field. If you think about taking a class, that's kind of a low-stakes way to test the water, especially if you're thinking about maybe eventually going back for a degree. You can see how it goes with one class at a time. And as Amanda mentioned before, emotional intelligence and leadership are high in demand right now in a lot of fields, so those could be some subjects to explore. Individual courses can really help you develop some subject matter expertise. They may help you develop a new skill. And if you're someone who's interested in lifelong learning anyway, they can be a great opportunity for you. If you're able to make more of a commitment, you can think about going back to earn a degree or a certificate. A lot of programs are now available online, many on a part-time basis, and affiliated with what we would call a brick-and-mortar school. So that would be an actual accredited college or university as opposed to something that's only available online. It's possible that your employer might be able to provide some financial support too, especially if the degree or certificate is related to your work. We had a Friday Forum webinar not long ago that was called Jumpstart Your Career, E-Learning for Any Career Phase. And it talked about a variety of e-learning opportunities that you could consider depending on what your field is and what your needs are. So moving on to the fifth resolution for 2017, and that's leverage technology. So as we know from Amanda's talk about trends, technology is a tremendously important part of career management. Taking stock of your technical skills on a routine basis and leveraging them is going to be very important. And again, as she mentioned earlier, all jobs now require some degree of technology proficiency. Having basic technology skills is now a universal expectation. And most of the other candidates applying for the jobs you would be applying for will, so you need to make sure that you are up to date as well. And so we'll talk again about why technology is so important, because it's very important to stress this, particularly for anyone who may have joined us late. But again, all jobs now require some degree of technology proficiency. Employers are now really expecting that everybody knows how to use Microsoft Office. So you want to look beyond that at additional technology that's standard in your field. And not only do you want to know and be comfortable using the technology that is used in your field right now, but you also want to be able to easily adapt to and learn any new technology that might be coming tomorrow. And again, as Amanda mentioned, the job application process itself now relies heavily on technology. There are online application systems. There may be video or Skype interviews. There might be other kinds of interactive processes along the way. Candidates also need to be reachable electronically. You may be reached out to through text message or through email, often on short notice. So you need to have access to technology, know how to use it. So if somebody calls you for a Skype interview tomorrow, you don't have to learn how to use Skype all of a sudden. You know that you're already set up and ready to go. Technology can also help you work more efficiently. There are a number of different kinds of apps for productivity, project management, shared calendars, note-taking, and more. They can help you work more efficiently. They can help teams work more effectively together, too. So that's another benefit of making sure your technology skills are up to date. And then finally, having a polished online presence and personal brand, particularly on LinkedIn, is a key part of your overall career management. Again, that can draw employers to you as a passive job candidate and can just make you ready to go the moment an opportunity arises. So in addition, there are some free or very low-cost sources of learning available online. Technology gaps can often be filled relatively inexpensively. A lot of resources are available, so we're listing some here on the screen. If you want to learn a new skill or maybe learn some software, brush up on your general computer skills, particularly if you've been out of the job market for a while. MOOCs are a great option. MOOC stands for Massive Open Online Courses, and they deliver academic or technical content in basically an online classroom kind of setting. So some of the top providers are listed here. Software training resources are available through sites like Allison or Lynda.com. Anybody who has the LinkedIn premium account, that account now also includes a subscription to Lynda because they acquired Lynda some months back. LinkedIn also has some other e-learning opportunities through their LinkedIn Learning site, so you can look on LinkedIn for more information about that. And a lot of computer basics are available. The Microsoft website has wonderful tutorials if you need to learn how to do something specific in using one of the Microsoft products. And so I have also shared a bonus slide. I was thinking about things that you should be thinking about on an ongoing basis that are an important part of your overall career management strategy. And the one thing I kept coming back to was career goals. So, you know, a new year is a great time to take stock of what your goals are. So making sure that you're regularly assessing what your goals are and where you stand in achieving them, making that part of your career management strategy and a resolution for 2017 is also very important. So there are some questions that you can think about as you're doing that. You know, think about the long and short-term goals that you've established. Where are you in reaching those goals? Think about whether these goals still make sense for you, if anything has changed for you over the last year. Why do those goals make sense, or why do they no longer make sense? Does it make sense for you to keep these goals, maybe make some changes to them, or possibly eliminate them, maybe in favor of some new goals? So this is something that you should be evaluating on a regular basis, maybe every year or two or more often as needed, so that you're constantly staying on target with your goals and making sure that everything else you're doing is in support of those goals. And so along those lines, if you do need help with goal setting or assessing where you are with regard to your goals, we're definitely happy to help. Alumni Career Services offers a number of services and resources, so we've shared a list here with you of the services that are open to everyone and then the resources that are available to alumni. So keep that in mind, that we are definitely more than happy to help. And so, again, if you would like to discuss your career management strategy, set up an appointment with us, you can reach us through the Alumni Career Services website. Appointments are scheduled online, and if you would like to follow up with one of us afterward, we've shared our contact information here. So with that, we are ready to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you all. While we're waiting for people to type in their questions, can you, I'm going to throw one at you, is just what would be one of the more common questions that you tend to get with regards to this list of resolutions or trends?
Yeah, so I can take that one, and Liz may have, she may chime in, or she may have a different question that she gets. But I know we've touched on networking a lot in this webinar, and I think the number one question I get is, how do I find people, which I believe we touched on with, you know, the LinkedIn alumni dashboard, or talking to friends and family, or using the Who's Online directory offered by the Alumni Association. So those are three kind of main buckets. But the real question I get is, how do I sort of get over my hesitation to contact a complete stranger? Because a lot of times, networking is cold emailing or cold calling someone because they have a job that you think is cool and you want to learn about it, or they work at a company that you're interested in and you're looking for a foot in the door. And so I always take Liz's advice that she offered to just make it a bite-sized activity. So, you know, make it a goal to reach out to one new person per week or every 2 weeks. Feel free to email them first, because that gives you a chance to sort of craft how you want to approach them. It gives them a chance to read it and respond. And then you can offer to just have a quick phone chat, or and then maybe the second conversation is, could we get coffee? So the way I typically do it whenever I'm seeking a position is I always email first, and I always ask, do you have 15 to 20 minutes to chat with me about whatever I'm asking them to talk to me about? That way it's something they can react to. I keep the email short and sweet, and it makes it really easy to say yes or no, or I'd love to, but I'm busy. Can we, you know, put this together? So I think giving someone something to react to, whether they're someone you know or you're introduced or they're a complete and total stranger, I think, first of all, don't be afraid. It's all part of your professional development. And second, We have some webinars, as Liz mentioned. Danny Rubin's webinar has some great examples of emails you can send. And don't overwhelm yourself. Just reach out to one or two new people a month or every 2 months, however you want to do it. But just do it, I guess, is my biggest piece of advice.
You know, I definitely agree with those suggestions. And sometimes it helps kind of with the anxiety of the situation to just keep in mind that most of the people that you're reaching out to have been in your shoes at some point before, and that they really want to help. So if you can let them know why you've chosen them and what your question is when you reach out to them, make sure, so if you're doing so through LinkedIn, make sure you're customizing the message. That just really makes a huge difference.
Thank you all. Kat has a question regarding that first cold call email, Amanda. Should you include a resume on that first email, or is that too much too soon?
Yeah, that's an awesome question, Kat. Typically in that very first email, I will not include a resume because what usually happens in the sort of response and back and forth when you're getting ready to schedule that call, typically when I ask someone for a call, they get back to me and they say, yes, by the way, could you send me your resume before we talk? And then that's usually when I'll send it. I think you saying too much too soon, that's a good way to sort of think about it. You know, if you're emailing someone, especially if you don't know them, that can come off as presumptive. But I think if you make the first contact and they email back and say, you know, please send me your resume, then that's great because it's put them in the position of asking you for it. And so then, of course, you can send it. No worries. A lot of times, too, this is why we also talk about the LinkedIn profile piece of it. A lot of times people won't ask for your resume, but they will go look you up on LinkedIn. So you want to make sure you have some kind of presence there. And of course, the LinkedIn profile doesn't have to be a complete repeat of your resume. But it is good to have something up there in case they decide to look you up before you guys chat.
Yeah, and often, you know, after the conversation, you may learn something that helps you tailor your resume, especially if that's a person you want to follow up with later about a job opportunity. So waiting until after your conversation can be a great strategy because it gives you that opportunity to connect your resume more closely to that field.
Oh, very good point. Thank you. The next question we have is someone asking specifically about a recent graduate. Any advice for a recent graduate on setting career goals, early professional skills to develop, and how to enter non-traditional fields?
So what I would say is, you know, if you've been exploring some ideas, I would think about looking at some job postings for any jobs you may have already been considering and read about what they entail. You know, can you envision yourself doing those things? Does it sound like something you would like to do? There's a website called ONET. It's ONET, O-N-E-T, online.org. Let me see if I can type this in. And ONET is overseen by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it has over 900 occupational reports. So you can learn more about different types of work, and it has a very structured format. So they're looking at things like knowledge, skills, abilities, education, work environment. You know, so if you're someone who doesn't like to be stuck in a chair all day or likes to talk to people, likes to make decisions, you can do some exploring based on all of these things. It's a great way to research what different jobs are like, and you can do some searching based on some of these categories, knowledge, skills, abilities, et cetera. It offers an interest profiler, so you can answer some questions based on interests you have, and it looks at some career themes that you can then do some searching around and determine some occupations that might be in line with your interest patterns. So it's a really powerful website, and if you're kind of in exploration mode, it's a great resource. And again, LinkedIn can also help using the alumni dashboard feature if you want to base it around some skills or maybe even companies that you may have learned about that sound interesting. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, and I would add to that, again, as Liz mentioned, self-assessment and exploration are really important because you definitely don't want to start down a path that, you know, you invest 5 years in and then suddenly you're like, oh, I have to change, which isn't bad either, but if you can save yourself that time, why not? But I think also once you get an idea of some of the positions that or industries or roles or what have you that align with your interests, start thinking about what that path looks like and what the investment what investment is required. So the reason why I say that is prior to coming to this role, I spent 4 years at Darden advising full-time MBAs. And the number one thing we learned was the value of sort of working backwards. So if you eventually want to be, you know, a chief marketing officer, it's really important that you pick the right internship when you go to business school. And it doesn't feel like it should be, you know, that far back that you have to be thinking about this stuff, but you kind of do. And so, you know, if you have some, you know, sort of big, hairy, audacious career goals, which is always good, think about what those are and then walk backwards. And, you know, maybe look at the some of the people who hold that position. Where did they go to school? What kind of training do they have? What are they proficient in? What are they doing professionally? So that can kind of help you figure out, like, would I need an MBA or would I need a law degree or a master's degree? And then that way you can start to lay the groundwork, especially as a recent grad, this is a great opportunity, start to lay that groundwork for anything you might need to do in order to make sure you can get where you want to be. Now, as you're going through that journey, if things change and your big goal changes, that's okay too, but it can at least help you start to figure out a path of, like, okay, this is typically how that role, how people in that role get to that role, so that can at least give you some guidance so you don't feel so overwhelmed by all of the choices.
Thank you all. We have one last question. Helen asked if you have any suggestions for self-assessment tools.
We work with the Strong Interest Inventory Assessment, which can be very helpful if you're exploring career paths. We also offer the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Assessment, which looks at kind of how we gather information, make decisions, and interact with the world around us. Strong may be a little more specifically occupation focused. The Strong is actually similar to the ONET instrument that I mentioned a moment ago. They use the same interest themes, but the Strong goes deeper. It looks at more areas of interest, and there's a 19-page report involved. So if you're interested in doing that, I am certified to do Strong and Myers-Briggs, and that's part of the advising services we offer.
Yeah, and I would also throw out there one assessment that we use a lot in the MBA world that I actually think is great for people who've been maybe working for like 5, 6, 7 years, whether you're going to business school or not. It's called Career Leader. We don't officially offer that through our office. Like, typically it's offered through business schools, but I've taken it, and I found it to be really helpful because it not only identifies perhaps roles and industries where you're showing alignment in terms of your interest and your past work experience and how you like to work, but there's a great section of that assessment that comes out called Key Motivators, and these are intrinsic things within you that you value. And so as you're evaluating jobs or industries, if work-life balance is your number one key motivator, then you're probably not going to go into investment banking. Like, that's the joke I always made at Darden, because those two things just don't mesh. So it can help you make some decisions, and I really like the key motivators piece because you can't ignore that. If you had that as your key motivator, if you have balance as the key motivator, and then you took an investment banking job, you'd probably be all right at first, but eventually you would probably grow to not really like that job because it's going against these intrinsic things that you value. So I find for people who've been in the workforce for, you know, a chunk of time who may be considering business school or just maybe considering a career switch, I think Career Leader can be a really handy tool, and you can purchase an individual assessment through their website. So it's careerleader.com.
All right, I think that's all the questions we have. So thank you again from Alumni Career Services here at UVA's Alumni Association, and have a great weekend.